person. Okay, thank you very much. Thanks very much, everybody, for persevering and for staying with us. I see we have a few dropouts, but hopefully all the British are still in the room. Right, I'm delighted to be chairing this session today. The last session is about a fair hearing, what reform agenda would change public attitudes to the EU. First, to introduce myself, I'm not Councillor Suzanne Richards. Unfortunately, she had an emergency, so she cannot be here with us. I am Councillor Angeliki Stoya. I am Assistant Executive Member in Manchester City Council for Culture and Leisure. So, about this last session, I think it flows very well from the previous session that we had about reforms in the European Union. For me, this session is very important because staying in or leaving and going out, we will still continue having relationships with the European Union and indeed its member states. If you're wondering about my accent, I am Greek. I've lived here since 1995, so well integrated, I think, at the moment. I will save my views about Greece and other European member states for myself as I am chairing this debate. I'd like to thank very much our speakers for taking part in this session. We need to leave this room, you'd be glad to hear, by 5 o'clock. So I will not take any of the speakers' time. I would like to invite Yasmin Qureshi to go to the stand over there. As you know, Yasmin has been the Labour Member of Parliament for Bolton South East since 2010. She began her legal career with the Crown Prosecution Service. And she became a specialist casework advocate dealing with complex and sensitive cases. I would like you, Yasmin, if you don't mind, just to spend just a few moments looking at the three questions that we have to address. Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, and it's a pleasure to be here to speak to you about this topic. I think the referendum is obviously going to a big, important step for the United Kingdom. The question is, a fair hearing, will the EU reform change public attitudes to the European Union? And I think the answer to that really depends on who's listening and who are you aiming this at. Those who are against being in the European Union, it's not going to make a blind bit of difference to them what Cameron came home with, because they just want to be out. And what he did, as we all know, was this was an attempt to appease the Tory right in his party, his MPs, as well as people who are members of the Conservative Party across the United Kingdom. This was very much aimed at them. It was the deal, the supposed deal he's got is no deal at all. He said, oh, I've got situation rules or whatever. But actually, they need ratification by other member states. And that won't happen until after the June referendum. So their so-called agreement isn't worth the piece of paper it's actually being printed on. So that's where we start with the question, well, you know, who are they going to, will it change public attitude? Well, that group, and there's about, I think, 30-35% who I think are very much hardcore, want to be out of Europe, and it doesn't really matter to them what agreement, what negotiation anybody brings home to them. I think it will, however, make a difference to some people, people who are perhaps wavering. There are quite a lot of people who are still undecided as to what they want to do. And some of those people, the thing that's really bugging them at the moment about the referendum, about the European Union, let's be honest about it, is the issue of immigration, for a lot of them. And because of that, and the fact that recently the conflict in Syria and Libya, all the refugees coming in has heightened and got right into this debate about immigration and the issue about, you know, essentially these foreigners coming in, bringing them with their alien cultures and religions, and the fact that, and it's not just an issue for United Kingdom, actually it's an issue that's becoming now in a number of countries in Europe as well, and especially those on the right of politics. Now, interesting, I talk about right and left. Of course, there are people who are very much on the left of politics, who were also against being in the European Union. So I think you can't use simple blasé, well, right or left. And the reason we know that those who are the left of the party, or are left of the political spectrum, is because they say that we shouldn't be just kind of tied to the European Union, that we're internationalist socialist labour movement, that we should be doing more work with other countries, Africa, Asia, the old Commonwealth, etc., and we should have a very strong relationship with them as well. And I think that's a very respectable argument to have, and actually I have a lot of sympathy and actually trust with that argument, because what I don't want us to be part of Europe, which is predominantly of so one religious group, one ethnic group, and I don't want us to be completely 100% bound into that. But here, I suppose where I differ is that I think we should have better trade relations. I think we should make efforts to have better relationship with India, China, Africa, South America, Far East, all over the world. We should be proactively engaging those countries and proactively should be dealing with them. But at the same time, I think Europe is beneficial. There are definitely reforms, and I think this is where we come to about the issue of reform. There are people, and I think I just referred to a British attitude survey which has been done. It's quite interesting. It says even those people who call themselves Europeans and who feel kind of, are supportive of the referendum, they still want changes to the European Union. And I think if that's the issues, what are the changes they want? And I think one of the big issues about the bureaucracy, that is too bureaucratic, too much money spent on bureaucracy as a person. So that's just a kind of overview synopsis.
That's great. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Can we move on to Graham Stringer? Just to remind you, Graham has been a Member of Parliament for Blakely and Broughton since 2010, having previously been the Member of Parliament for Manchester Blakely from 1997. Prior to entering Parliament, Graham was the leader of Manchester City Council for 12 years. He has been with us for the most of the session today. Thanks very much, Graham. Please, I'll give you the floor. Thank you.
Yeah, it was a surprise to me at the second session that the person who was going to do it couldn't make it along the swing. I'll challenge myself to 3 points and be as positive as I can be. I was told I was a negative in the last. Be true. I go to three sorts of meetings on the EU. Those people who receive mere interruptions of applause because they're on the other side of the argument. Those are great debates are 50-50. And this kind of meeting where people don't disagree to, where people disagree, they're the more difficult meetings, but probably the more worthwhile. In terms of the percentages at the moment, so the third people, whatever is said, will vote to come out. Third people will vote to stay in. And the argument is what we say, we will say different things from the, what I've heard in this room, to the third in the middle. I don't think we should use the argument of I've heard you, this is an argument in the Conservative Party. Well, it is. They're terribly split on. But that's not the most important argument. I think we should think about ourselves. The party, by and large, is 80%, 85% in favour of staying in Europe. Unfortunately, and this is a split and a difference that we should be more focused on, our voters aren't. And we need to engage and we need to understand why. The people who voted for us last time, it's about 38% of the voters who have come out. But that's because a lot of them had already left for the Conservative Party. And that needs seriously addressing. And the way I would be positive about either the argument that other people on the platform have been making, this argument is not going to be won on the detailed facts. I go to meeting after meeting, and I've become an expert on it, but I learned something new about the EU at nearly every meeting I go into. There isn't, if you suck up every word of all the agreements and all the directives, that's not going to persuade people. This is an argument about futures, and I think we can get an agreement about that. I believe in a future of us returning control of our laws to a parliament in this country, where people can, there is a government and a country that it doesn't get behind barriers in the EU, so that it's much more difficult for a black person from Africa to get into this country than it is for a European who can come in. There is a level of racism in the current policies, and the only way that would be removed would be to have complete freedom of access. So I hope that's positive, and I hope that's where the argument will be between two choices in the future. I think there is a great choice for us returning control of our borders, control of the electorate to our home.
Thank you very much, Graham. Thank you. Can I please introduce you now to Councillor Kevin Peel? Kevin is the Labour and Cooperative Councillor for Manchester City Centre. He represents the UK local government on the European Committee of the Regions, that's the European Assembly of Local and Regional Representatives. Kevin also serves on the National Executive of Labour Movement for Europe, Labour's pro-European campaign group. Go for it, Kevin.
Thanks very much, Mike. I'm terrible at sticking to time because I get really excited about this this issue. The introduction's already been made. I'm a councillor here, this is my ward, so a double welcome to you. But I grew up in Merseyside, a place called Wiston, so I have a real passion for this issue for three different kind of personal reasons. My hometown of Wiston, not a great place to live if any of you have ever been there. It's transformed with European investment. We only got new double glazed windows and doors as a result of ERDF funding a few years back. And we got new roads, built a new train station, the recent electrification of the Manchester Liverpool line was part funded by European money. I then moved into Liverpool. Liverpool's a city on its knees that was going into managed decline by the Tories. Billions, literally billions of direct investment from the EU over the last 20 years. And of course Manchester now, and you can close your eyes and spin around and go into any building in the city centre virtually, and there's been massive direct investment, and that has gone out right across the city, and the city region, not just the centre. I'm a Labour for Europe as well. That's another thing that I do, and so I'm doing lots of things like this all around the region and around the country. And very clearly, the first point I'm going to make, which is about a third, so we're appealing to that third in the middle, really, who are broadly sceptical, like the British people generally are, on this issue, and in fact most things, but certainly open to persuasion based on this kind of what's in it for me, what's best for the country type argument. I just want to just deal with one thing first, which is this kind of, I'm guilty of this as well, so I'm not kind of picking anybody, but when we talk about the EU doing good things or bad things, the EU is simply the system that we have set up to deal with common problems. It's a set of institutions, there's lots of them, and the decisions made within it are elected politicians. So legislation in Europe is made by two bodies, who both have co-decision-making power, the Council of Ministers, which is made up by elected politicians from member states, and the European Parliament, which is made up of elected politicians, directly elected by us. That is really, really important. I think there is a democratic deficit in the EU, but there certainly is not a lack of democracy, and I think in some ways we have more democracy at the European level. It's just a bit removed from us, and so it's more difficult to see. But, I mean, Ray was talking about reform, and a lack of reform, but the EU institutions are not static, they are constantly reforming, there's constant reform to adapt to the changing circumstances that we find ourselves in. And I'm going to give you some examples, well, I'll give you five. There's at the moment the refit review, which is a review of all European legislation to make sure it's fit for purpose, scrapping unnecessary red tape, looking at making processes to implement things simpler, deepening the single market, that's a huge issue, and that's something that there's broad support for in this country. Things like the digital single market and the jobs that could create here. Root and branch reform of the common fisheries policy, there's been serious reform, but not enough reform of the common agricultural policy. And currently a rewriting of the rule book about how EU laws made and introducing the impact assessment so we can look at the effects of the European laws as well. Now, look, a few of these are going to send sceptics running to the polls to vote Remain, but it doesn't mean they're not important, and there's lots of other reforms that we can do. Some of them we can do already. So Greg talked about the the issue of, about sort of Parliament, for example. If we wanted to, if the Tory government or even the last Labour government had wanted to, it could introduce significantly more time to debate European issues in the UK Parliament. So in lots of countries, ministers go before Parliament a few weeks before they go to a council minister to say, this is our negotiating position, MPs discuss it from all sides, perhaps it's changed, perhaps it's not, perhaps it's strengthened. And that is a result, try as we might, I don't think we're going to get the BBC or any media here significantly covering more of the European Parliament. But if we have more debates about European issues in the UK Parliament, which is entirely up to us, then we would get far more of that. Democracy, I think, though, is a point, and I think we should, I think the way we elect MEPs is ridiculous. I said this in Jack Straw's constituency, luckily he wasn't there in the room, but all his members agreed with me. But it's just a, you can't have a constituency of 5,500 square miles and 7 million people, and I expect 8 people to have some meaningful link, which we think is so important, yeah, between the constituency and their representatives. So I think we need to look at that. And we need to look at the way that your vote and the governance of Europe are linked up, because I think that was an important point that someone's already made. Why democratic reform at the European level? More transparency of council decisions. Stronger accountability, direct election of government president was mentioned earlier, lots and lots more I won't talk about them because I'm running out of time. Growth and jobs, I mean Greg said, you know, we're growing without the EU. I think the idea that our growth is not linked to our membership is bonkers, and businesses are telling us exactly the opposite. But we do need to reform the budget, we need it more focused on jobs and growth, I think. We need a refocusing of lots of different budget priorities. But I think mostly, I'll end on this, I'm nearly there, is we don't need reform, we need legislation that is more closely linked to people's lives and on bread and butter issues which matter to citizens and businesses. And I'll just give you three very quick examples. Roaming charges were mentioned already. By next year there won't be any across the whole of the EU, and it would have happened sooner if MEPs had their way, but member states blocked it. Copyright reform, so you can take your Netflix or your Sky or your iPlayer on holiday to Spain and watch whatever you like. That's part of a huge, wide digital single market package. And the energy union, which there's lots of technical bits to, but fundamentally make energy bills cheaper for people here. These are the things we need to be talking about. These are the things people care about. So just finally, if I can, a call to arms. This is great debating here. It's really important. We have this debate. We have to win. This will be won on the doorstep. The biggest thing that will convince people to vote Remain is not reform, it's having a conversation with them on the doorstep. I've got lots of resources I can provide for you. There's some of these at the back you can take away. And I've got sign up the Labour Movement for Europe, Northwest Europe Action List. If you stick your email down, I can send you lots of relevant information and details about how you can get involved locally in the Northwest. Thank you.
Jesse, Joe Jacobs to go to the podium. Jesse is the North East Field Director for Stronger Inn. She has previously won the Sunday Times Social Entrepreneur of the Year Award for The Way Out, which is a charity that she set up when she was 20. Now she's the Field Director of Stronger Inn, the all-party campaign for the United Kingdom to remain in the European Union.
Thank you. Yeah, before working in politics, I worked for 10 years running a women and young people's charity that was tackling poverty in the North East, and I saw a lot of it. We saw women and young people who at times couldn't eat, people whose stomachs were hurting because they were hungry. And democracy to them was so distant that any type of reform of the EU would be, quite frankly, pointless. They are the part of the 30% who will want out. They feel the brunt of welfare reform, public sector cuts, hospitals at capacity, and are living in some of the most deprived situations that I've ever seen. And they are hungry and looking for answers. But the problem is, someone has been giving them answers for 20 years because they look for their answers in the Daily Mail and the Sun and daytime TV that tells them there is a reason for your problems, there is a reason why your life is hard, there is a reason why our hospitals are full. And it's not because of lack of investment by the government, it's because it's full of immigrants. And they believe it. And so to think that we can change that story in 4 months, quite frankly, is impossible. So for this campaign, we can't focus on those people. And I think that we know that actually a socialist EU with reform could change things for these people. We could put in place protections. We could make sure that there is a good quality and standard of wages across the EU in the sectors
that where they're being outpriced by migrant workers. We could make sure that we look at energy reforms, like the councillor said, even be more radical at land policies. But I'm afraid these ideas at the moment would be lost. And because, as I said, we've had 20 years of immigrant bashing and the other bashing, and we have 4 months to make a different story. So we have to look at the different other people for this, the undecided. And actually, for some of those undecided, the reforms that can be put in place, yes, they might have been with linear, or some people might think they were linear, but things like the reform of welfare for people coming into the country did appeal to the people who look at fairness and think, well, yes, you should put something in. If you put something in, you take something out. And the big problem with reform, though, is that it's been spoken about by politicians. And we know that people have lost trust and faith in politicians. Most people say to me, I don't want to hear about EU reform from a politician because you're all going to say one thing to back up your argument. I want to know what Joan down at the local shop has to say about it. I want to know what Michael at the garden centre has to say about EU reform. What do my friends and my communities think about EU? Because actually, I don't know. And people are looking for facts. People want to know, what difference does the EU make to my life? And that's what I think that we can do with this campaign. And actually, lots of the in campaigns are about that. They're about mobilising grassroots voices in communities to sell how good the EU is and has been. We have won rights, we have won protections. We, from the small wins like data roaming to maternity pay. And all that said, the most important thing for now is to win, but we do have to come back. And what I hope is that once the campaign is won, and it will only be won by our voices, your voices, my voices, everyone must get mobile on this campaign. I can't express how much we need to do that. But we do need to look at longer term EU reform. We need to go back to those disengaged communities. I want to go back to those communities one day where people's stomachs are hurting because they're hungry. And I want to give them a different narrative. I want to start to undo the story that they've been told for 20 years. And so once this campaign is not going to finish. We all need to be ambassadors for a socialist EU. And we need to think about a 20-year rewriting of that story. And make sure that one day, what even if those people were part of our campaigns, that the people whose stomachs hurt are fighting for an EU that works for them. But in the next 4 months, the first thing we all have to do is just make sure that we win. Thank you.
Right. Thank you very much to our speakers. I am keen to open the discussion and ask you for your questions. Can I take this lady over here and followed by you? Thank you.
Thanks. I'm staying in a bunkhouse on Edelt this weekend. I'm supposed to be hiking over Kinder today. It was a toss up between this and hiking on Kinder.
Why are you here?
But I mean, I found myself this morning having an argument with one of my fellow bikers, or not bikers, she wants to go out. And she said, why? Sovereignty. So I said, okay, what do you mean by that? She said, we've got no democracy. I said, there seems to be an elected parliament in Europe. Oh, well, yes, but we need to vote now. You know, we ought to set our rules. Well, actually, we do, mostly. Here's the key thing. My question to you is, how are we going to educate the British public about what the EU is? Because we are fighting against the press, the tabloid press, who are perpetuating such myths. How are we going to get round, over, under, through that barrier? Because that really is our main task.
Thank you. Can we go to this gentleman over there, please? And if you have any questions, please indicate so I can come to you. Have a look. Thank you.
Yasmin Qureshi talked about how he sort of straddles the traditional left-right divide decision. I was just wondering why the panel thought this was an issue which seems to break down traditional political alliances.
Thank you. Can we go right at the back? Is it Marcia? Thank you.
You've always been so helpful in forming arguments on the doorstep, and that's what it's all about. Arguments on the doorstep, what's all about. And I just want to know, who, and if it's allowing you to tell me, who is going to provide me with those arguments that I'm prepared. I want to win an election, and I know for a lot of people the Labour Party that seems to be alien to them at the moment. I want to win this election as the most important one there is in my generation, and I voted in the first one to stay in my first vote. I think there have to be different messages to different people. I'm quite happy to do that. We have to be ruthless. I want those messages. To the 20-year-olds interested in the environment, to the small business person, to the person who's bothered about immigration, who are we targeting and who's going to give me the messages?
Right, I'll take two more questions and then I will refer to the panelists. Yes, right at the back, and this lady then in the front.
Thank you. I'd like to echo what the lady over in the corner, Martin William, echo what the lady in the corner said about sovereignty. The myth seems to be that we've lost a lot of sovereignty. Now, the things as far as UK law that have been influenced by the EU, as far as I can see, are predominantly to do with workers' rights, to do with consumer issues, to do with environmental issues. But if you ask yourself the question, who decides our foreign affairs policy, who decides our defence policy, who decides what weapons we have, who decides how the health service is run, who sets the budget, who sets UK tax laws, it's the British government. It's the British government that does that. We haven't sacrificed our sovereignty, we're not likely to, either before David Cameron's negotiations or even more since then. We haven't sacrificed sovereignty over the things that people are concerned about. It's a myth and it needs to be debunked.
Thank you very much. Can I ask lady at the third row? Thank you.
My name's Anne. I'd like to make a comment as well to you, not so much about the sovereignty, but about how do we get people to understand more about what is the EU or what isn't. And I'd just like to say, on a personal experience, I live in a ward in Manchester called Mossside, and I know at least between 200 and 300 people who I know do not have a vote. They didn't understand or weren't able or even thought Manchester City Council's Labour said it doesn't matter. So they didn't register in September, October when they had to, in spite of having quite a big campaign to try and get people to do so. This week I have had maybe a dozen people knocking on my door or emailing or phoning in a complete panic, because what has happened in Parliament this week has actually helped dramatically to make many people realise how important this election is. It's a very multicultural community, so I have to say most of the people who phone me up, in fact, have been not white. Most of them are very, very, very anxious about what they see as terrible racism in Parliament this week. Some of the people have been talking from the Conservative Party. They're just shocked, rigid. I don't think they ever thought they'd hear anything like that. And they're saying, can we now vote? We didn't know there was going to be this referendum in 2016. It's a different situation now. And I suppose I'd like to ask, in this whole thing about changing people's minds, this week is changing quite a lot of things, and I hope the next few weeks and months will also add to people's consideration of why this is a very important issue. We can't just say that because we're in Manchester and it's all Labour, we don't need to worry about things. And that's, I suppose my question is there what likelihood is there for more of a democratic relationship to the referendum itself?
Thank you very much.
Certainly in Manchester.
Fantastic. I'm going to ask the panellists to respond. Who wants to go first? Yes, Yasmin, please. Thank you.
Just want to make a couple of points, and then I actually want to come on to the question about the right and left issue that I think Martin or somebody, at the back asked. You mentioned about the fact that democracy is mentioned on the doorstep. The other one is about the laws our colleagues in Salisbury. And the other two that I mentioned doorstep regularly is, we're paying so much money into the European Union, and why are we doing that? And of course, the good old one, too many immigrants, look at our schools and our health, and everything's creeping at the door. And you know, so that's the other two. And last week I was in my constituency out campaigning, knocking on the door, and quite a few people raised this whole issue about, and that was the four things they talked about. Now, I happen to think both those four things are actually myths, in the sense that democracy point, I think we've already made the fact that actually it is democratic, we do elect some people there, there are a number of discussions going on. The council ministers, if our ministers, we go there, and there is a political involvement. The other one about the laws, I remember when the European Court passed this, the European Court said that prisoners' rights to vote, they said the UK was in breach of some rules and regulation, and so much fuss was made. And actually, if you looked at what the European Court said, what it actually said was not that Britain was in breach of the European Convention because it doesn't have the allowed of prisoners have rights to work. What it actually said is the British Parliament has not discussed the issue about whether prisoners should have the right to vote, and we suggest that they do that. And then there was a big discussion in Parliament about it. So a lot of it goes back to misrepresentation of what so-called the European Court does or say, and what it actually says. And I, as a lawyer for many, many years, I have to say that I welcome the European Court's position in human rights laws. And not just human rights, because it's always painted as, oh, the prisoners and the criminals get their human rights. People forget about the fact that at the moment, for example, you can bring actions against local authorities, against public bodies for wrongdoing. Well, you couldn't do that 20 odd years ago. It's because of the European Convention, it said that there must be a system available within each nation state that you can challenge the actions of the executive, and you can challenge the actions of local authorities. But that is when things like judicial review became more stronger, where you could actually sue local authorities for abuses and things. And so people try to suggest that somehow the European Court has actually been bad thing. Actually been the best thing about, in my opinion, for Europe. Now, on the issue of the left-right, in essence, the reason that is because there are people on the left who think that the European Union is all about money, it's all about big businesses, it's all about capitalism, and to an extent it is. And I think we can't take away from the fact that capitalism, money orientation, is very key to the European Union. And of course, the second thing is they don't want, you know, just a closed union with people of same religious and ethnic group, and they want. They're coming from the complete opposite reason, not because of immigration, they're not bothered about immigration, but they want is us to mix with other countries in the world, other parts of the world, so that, you know, we have a broader society. So that's why, and I think one of their reasons is the issue about capitalism, and the fact that, you know, it's all rich people and businesses who want it. Having said that, there are some businesses who say, we don't want to be in Europe. I mean, I'm just going very skirting of it because I know the panelists want to speak, but I think that's one of the big things. And the right, some of them, of all, don't want our thing because for them it is only an issue about our law. I can tell you honestly as a barrister that our sovereignty has not been affected by being Europe. Yes, there have been some, you know, adjustments to bring in light in the 21st century on environmental issues and health and safety laws and the social chapter and things like that. But I think we can make the European Union a better place by being in it, by including this workers' rights. We can ask the European Union to work with creation of jobs and the issue of the transatlantic trade treaty as well, to, you know, change that around. And then I just want to finish up with, sure, like a bit Vicky and Mitty here, but we have got a big challenge, make no bounds about it, because they know this, well, they have all the newspapers against this. And I think it's going to be a case of putting our heads above the parapet. It's all about talking to everyone, and it's giving a good reason to be in Europe, and that is things like peace and security. Remember, Europe's fighting with each other, just two world wars have arisen out of it. It's towards that. There's 2 million British people who live in Europe. And so what will happen to all of those people? So there's a whole lot of reasons why we should be, I think, part of the organ, but reformed, I think it is fair to say, one could say there should be some reforms within the system. But on the whole, I think, you know, but it's going to be an uphill struggle, and we're going to have to deal with all the issues about immigration and law
Thank
and
you.
Money.
Thank you very much, Yasmin. Just to remind our panellists, and I'm going to ask Jessie to go next, the questions were around how we educate people about what the EU is, what it does, who is going to provide us with the arguments, sovereignty, consumers' rights, and who makes decisions in Europe, and then also how can we get more people to understand here what's at stake. Thank you.
Yeah, I want to talk about the sovereignty and put a different slant on that. Sometimes I think when people say we've lost our sovereignty, I think they're talking about British identity. I think we're in a transition between a Britain that was based on empire, a Britain that ruled the waves, that ruled Britannia, and a new Britain, an outward-facing Britain, a Britain that stands in solidarity with its neighbours, a Britain that is about goodness and compassion and solidarity. And for a lot of us across the Labour movement, what's really interesting in this debate is that 85% we're on the same side. For a few months now, we haven't been on the same side. We have been at odds, and this is a uniting issue. And isn't that really interesting? Because I think there's something more going on. This is a battle for what Britain can be. And I think that any of us who are in the Labour Party, who are socialists, and whatever brand of socialism that looks like to you, that is our common denominator about a different type of greatness, but it's not letting go of that. And I think we need to convince people and to share that vision of greatness to our neighbours, that actually by having a seat at the table at Europe, we influence 500 million lives for better. We are able to shape laws that protect workers across the EU, that we are lifting people out of poverty in Poland as well as in the northeast, and yes, we talk about reform, but we have to recognise that trade is making Britain and all of these nations stronger by being united. So I just wanted to kind of share a different thought about that, and then the fact that people are ringing up to register to vote, I mean, that's fantastic. And something, again, that we need to build capital on. Let's not use, you know, the Scottish referendum was awful for Labour. You know, we're decimated. This could be Labour's opportunity to win back people and to win back people to our cause. So let's present that vision. Let's get those unregistered voters registered, and let them be part of our campaign, and let other people, you know, who are the Tory voters that are absolutely internationalists and seeing that Labour Party is united on this fight, and maybe we'll win some Tory voters back over enough to win a 2020 election.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Graham to go next, and then Kevin. Thank you, Graham.
I'll try and be very brief. Those people who say this doesn't affect our sovereignty are just simply wrong. More than 50% of our laws are quoted in the House of Commons document and now determined in the EU. Whether you look at fisheries policy, which has been a disaster and not determined here, that's a loss of sovereignty. If you look more recently at the Viking and Manhood judgments in the European Court of Justice, they're undermining the whole of the minimum wage policy in this country and across Europe. I can give you a list of areas of sovereignty that have been lost, so it's just simply wrong to say that. I think it's really interesting why both the left and the right split on this issue. I think it is the weight of importance you give to particular issues determines the outcome. I mean, I don't wish to be rude to my hosts, but I'm not surprised that the Fabians who believe in slow, progressive improvement look for a bureaucratic solution rather than a democratic solution. And the centre has tended to do that, and the left and right have tended to look more at a sovereignty and control issue. Final point, and it's a light-hearted point. I go to meetings, as I said before, that are wildly enthusiastic about coming out of Europe. Meetings that are wildly enthusiastic about staying in, and some that are more balanced. Of the two at the extreme ends, both those kinds of meetings hate the press, and it is every activist meeting I've been going to in a lifetime spent with politics always distrust the press. The one thing I agree with almost every speaker that said, this argument, wherever you come at it from, is going to be won on the doorstep. And by not politicians on the doorstep, but by people talking to people in the community they trust. And I think that's really where it will be at.
Great, thank you very much. Kevin, shall I ask you to go last? But I don't intend to take another round of questions unless you have anything pressing. I'm going to close by asking all of our panelists to get prepared to tell me. Sorry. Right, to give me one sentence about why taking part on this referendum is important. I'm looking for a soundbite that can be tweeted. Start thinking, panelists, please. Kevin, thank you.
Okay, Graham's right. Perhaps he didn't expect me to say, but I mean, our sovereignty is affected. We pool sovereignty to achieve common objectives that we cannot achieve alone as a country. And there's something that says something about that on the back of our membership cards. We're about social justice, we're about equality, we're about opportunity for all in the Labour Party. And so, of course, we are naturally, and the vast majority of us, are about working together with our European partners to achieve some of those goals. It's not 50%. House of Commons research says 13%, even referencing in any vague way EU legislation.
Out of that
sovereignty is a sort of red heading. Yes, we give up a little bit of sovereignty, and we do it so we can achieve more together than we can achieve alone. And I'm going to answer two of the questions. I'm going to answer this one, which is education. I mean, the Tories have downgraded citizenship education, which is a real shame, because part of that is teaching about politics. Well, obviously, a lot of that is teaching about politics, but one of the modules is about European politics, I know. I think that's really important. I think all children should have access to good civic and political education, and that should include all levels of government that affect all of our lives. And that's the way to achieve it. I mean, I don't think the vast majority of current adults in this country, we can find some magic way to win people over by explaining how it works. It's never going to happen. People just aren't bothered. I think what we've got to talk about is the things that it does that affect their lives in a positive way. And I mentioned some of those policy things before. There's lots more beyond that. And that's what people will be really interested in. But in the long term, it's education. And Marsha's point, I think, what can you do? I've got loads of stuff I mentioned already that I'm happy to circulate. I've got some fantastic stuff, thematic briefings across a whole range of different policy areas specific to the North West. The 1.7 billion of direct investment we've had just since 2007, for example, all of the fantastic environmental protections, consumer protections, equality, workers' rights. I've got lots of different booklets which I can send over to people by email if you sign up at the back. And I'm also doing some training. I'm doing some tomorrow in Warrington and a couple of weeks in Manchester, if anybody's interested, to give people information and confidence to talk about Europe positively on the doorstep as Labour activists. Please. Talk to me about that. But look, this is, as I said before, this is a fight we need to win on the doorstep and in conversations down the pub and on Facebook and everywhere else. And we can win it by having the arguments, and they're good arguments. There are good, solid, progressive arguments for why we need to stay in. We just need to sort of be clear about them and make them.
Great. Okay. Thanks very much. Thank you for spending your Saturday afternoon with us to listen, to ask, to participate to the Fabian Society Conference. Today we try to explore what Europe means to us today and how might that change if we stay in, or how can it change if we indeed decide to get out. I would like to especially thank the speakers for taking the time, all of the speakers that attended here today, and thank you. I would ask you to take this conversation back on the doorstep on your communities. But before we go, I'm going to ask for our panelists for a soundbite, one sentence, one word, or an idea around why taking part on this referendum is important. I am going to start with Kevin. I don't want to put you on the step. If you're not ready, I will move.
I think it affects us all.
Simple as that.
This referendum will define what type of nation
that Britain is for a generation, for the children that I haven't yet had yet. And if that's not important, then I don't know what is. And I want to be a great Britain with a great.
A long she's not heard a full stop yet.
And I want to be a Britain based on greatness, which is influence and leadership of nations for good, for prosperity and solidarity.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Jess. Yasmin?
Yes. Use your vote or lose it.
Fantastic. Excellent. Excellent. Very good. Either way, use your vote. Graham?
That sounded like a threat, Yasmin. The referendum is more important than a general election, because it is the nature of our government for at least 40 years.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, everybody.
Yes. Don't forget to take one of these, they're on the back chair on your way out. Sign up.
I've actually come up from Lincolnshire, so it's not just the northwest.
You can take a Minister National booklet from England to Europe, and there's an empty form inside.